Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. Welcome to Bob Inyart Live. I'm the pastor of Denver Bible Church. We've been talking about the likelihood of America going to war soon with North Korea. So I'd like to share with you the discussion we had 15 years ago on the air regarding the principles of war with a man named John Lofton. Lofton is now with the Lord, so he was a Christian, although we challenged him on a number of his views. If you'll notice, when I asked John about King David fighting and slaying Goliath, or about when Abraham went after the kidnappers of Lot, I asked him about the morality of those biblical events, and as I recall, he had no answer. So I think that gives us insight into the correct understanding of the principles of war related to this discussion. Let's hear it. Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. I am Bob Inyart, America's most popular self-proclaimed right-wing religious fanatic, homophobic anti-choice talk show host. This past summer, there was a bit of controversy that was stirred in Baltimore, Maryland, when a Christian journalist, political commentator, analyst, filled in for a local talk show host on a show that was very pro-Israel. And the guest host was John Lofton. He's the publisher of the Lofton Letter, and he's been a journalist, commentator, syndicated columnist nationally. In fact, he was on America's Voice TV network back in the late 90s when Bob Inyart Live was on the same network. And he's got a lot of strong Christian views. He's against abortion, against homosexuality. He opposes George W. Bush's faith-based initiative, which is great. That shows he's not just your run-of-the-mill Christian right-winger. He really thinks through these issues. And so he's against that. Welfare is wrong, and so the churches should not dish out government welfare. And he's opposed to evolution, opposed to public schools. I think he's even opposed to prayer in the public schools because he'd rather get the kids out and the government shouldn't be running schools anyway. So this guy really down the line is strong on biblical principles. But I'd like to read to you a quote from a Maryland newspaper article about the controversy that was stirred when John Lofton was a guest host on WCBM. Let me read you just part of this article. According to Mr. Lofton, when it comes to Israel's policy of extrajudicial assassinations, he said the moral ambiguities of the situation are self-evident. I was merely suggesting that before you execute someone, maybe you ought to give them a trial. So, Mr. Lofton, did the reporter get the story straight?
Pretty controversial position, huh? Before you execute somebody, there ought to be a trial, there ought to be evidence, there ought to be witnesses. How about that?
Well, I'd like to talk through that. But first, can you tell our audience, since everyone in the audience may not know of you, could you tell us your position generally on Israel and the Israeli-Palestinian conflict? We'd like to talk to you during the interview, perhaps about the Iraq situation and whether or not you think we should go to war there. But so where are your positions on these issues?
Well, my position would be basically that it's none of our business. I mean, I come to this a little late. We've given maybe $100 billion altogether, that's a billion with a B, in foreign military aid to Israel since Israel was officially created. But what happened on this radio show, I was filling in for a longtime friend, or at least I thought he was a friend, Tom Maher, and who's some kind of conservative, although he's a conservative who's a Roman Catholic and has told me repeatedly that he really doesn't bring his religion into his work, which is an interesting observation. In any event, one of the hours that I used was to discuss terrorism and raise the question of what exactly is it? Perhaps it's not as easily defined or thought about as everybody thinks. I mean, it's a word that's pretty glibly used today. And I began by saying that Israel was founded by terrorists, people like Menachem Begin, who won the Peace Prize 30 years later. I mean, he was part of, I think he led the team that blew up the King David Hotel in 1946, which...
In Jerusalem.
Yeah, killed a bunch of British soldiers and officers and 19 civilians. I pointed out that, you know, maybe bin Laden would get the Peace Prize in 30 years. I raised the question of our dropping two atomic bombs on Japan in World War II on open cities. No pretense, really, that they were military targets. I said that I thought, you know, what some of the founders of Israel did was terrorism, and I thought dropping A-bombs on open cities in Japan was terrorism. Well, to make a long story short, there was a firestorm of reaction from callers. Many of them identified themselves as Jewish, thought it was a horrible thing to say that. They didn't really deny that Begin and others had been part of the Stern Gang and the Irgun and had, in fact, done these things. But, of course, that was thoroughly defensible when they did it. And some people objected to the idea that dropping A-bombs on open cities was terrorism. In any event, the next day, when I was off the show, my guest hosting was over, I tuned in the show.
Well, then I understand, right. Then the host was upset with you. He was your friend. But that's not really why I want to talk to you about the issues. And
sure.
That's just an opportunity to launch us into the issues. So, okay, those are some of your views on Israel and even some of the things we've done as Americans. How about Iraq? And then we could get into these issues.
Well, as a Christian, I think it's pretty clear that the only kind of war that is biblically sanctioned is a war of self-defense. And I don't mean self-defense used poetically or metaphorically. I mean when we're attacked. And Iraq has not attacked us. And there's been no evidence that I've seen presented by the administration that shows that Iraq even really plans to attack us. So I think it's just crazy, the idea that we ought to go to war in that part of the world. But I think the idea that we ought to go to war in that part of the world is powered by Bush's doctrine, which strikes me as crazy. I mean, when he spoke at West Point in June of this year, Bush said, and I've got the quote right here in front of me, that the United States was responsible for the peace of the planet. We will not leave the safety of America and the peace of the planet at the mercy of a few mad terrorists and tyrants. There was applause, of course. He was at West Point. We will lift this dark threat from our country and from the world.
All right. Now, John Lofton, I'd like to begin to address some of the issues you've raised. Maybe we'll start in reverse order.
Sure.
Where you're saying that the Bible would only justify a war where you're in direct self-defense.
I believe so. Self-defense. I don't see any other kind of wars sanctioned by God.
Okay. How about a war where you are defending your friends, your allies?
Well, as a Christian, I believe in defending what used to be called Christendom. In other words, when Christians are under attack anywhere, I would think it would be our role to try to help them.
Well, let's say my neighbor is not a Christian. Mm-hmm. And I see someone is beating him in his backyard, wants to rob him or rape his wife, then I would have certainly the right, and I think even God would want me, if I love my neighbor, whether my neighbor's a Christian or not, it'd be a good thing for me to help defend my neighbor, whether he's a believer or not. Would you agree with that on a personal level?
Yeah, that sounds okay to me.
Okay, great. And then quite often on Bob and Yurt Live, we try to simplify foreign affairs, international relations, when we bring them down to personal relations, because there's some overlap in some of the principles of justice and self-defense. So we need to take a break, John. But then I'd like to ask you, how about fighting against the Nazis in World War II? Does that fit in your policy? Welcome back, Bob and Yurt Live, where we have the publisher of the Lofton Letter on the phone with us. And John Lofton, thank you for joining us. How could someone get a hold of your publication?
Well, they could do it a couple of ways. They could email me, and I'd love to hear from anybody who wanted to email me at JLOF, as in Frank, JLOF at AOL.com, JLOF at AOL.com.
All right.
Or they could drop me a note through the old snail mail at 313-313 Montgomery Street in Laurel, L-A-U-R-E-L, Maryland, 20707. 313 Montgomery Street, Laurel, Maryland, 20707. Be glad to send you a sample of the newsletter.
All right. And jloff at AOL.com.
Yes, sir.
So, John, how about World War II? Certainly, the Nazis, they were attacking our friends overseas. They obviously eventually slaughtered many, many civilians intentionally.
Sure.
It's right for a country to get in on a fight to help their friends if they're able to. Isn't that true?
You know, I was thinking that during the break about your question about your neighbor. It seems to me that there's an obvious difference between going to help my neighbor or not help my neighbor next door and declaring war and taking an entire nation into war.
Well, sure there is. Obviously, there are differences there. But the fundamental principle of would we have the right to help, let's say when France is occupied by the Nazis. And the Nazis, it's a murderous, socialist, godless regime. Would we have the right or would it be wrong for us to come to the aid of a neighbor and help them throw off a tyrannical, murderous occupation?
Well, see, I think the neighbor analogy already starts to skew the thing. And if you say no, then you look like, well, you're a bad person.
Okay, well, how about forget the neighbor analogy?
Yeah.
How about in that example? Is it just for America to enter the war against the Nazis?
No, I don't think so. I believe what George Washington said in his farewell address, we were to avoid entangling alliances, European wars. Pat Buchanan makes a great case, which I thoroughly agree with in his book, The Death of the West. There was no evidence whatsoever that Hitler posed any threat at all to the vital national security interests of the United States.
So you think that it would have been, as America, if we were a very strong Christian nation, which we weren't. We've never been a very strong Christian nation, but we have Christian roots to some extent. But if we were a very strong and powerful Christian nation and atheistic socialists are slaughtering civilians in our neighboring nations, you think it would be wrong for us to come to their aid?
Well, why don't we take this out of the realm of rhetorical questions?
Rhetorical question. It happened in history
If you think we were required to go get involved in World War II.
I didn't say that we were required.
I didn't say that you said it. I was trying to ask you a question.
Okay, I'm asking if we had the right to help our neighbors if we so chose to.
I see no such right in the Bible that would require us to go fight.
Well, you're confusing a right and an obligation.
There are no rights in the Bible. There are only duties and obligations. Bible doesn't speak about rights.
No, the Bible does. When the Bible says, thou shalt not murder and thou shalt not steal, that tells us we have a right to life and a right to own property. And so that if the government wants to take away all our property without due process, then the government is violating our right of property ownership. Mm-hmm. And if the government is going to slaughter us, they're violating our right to life unless we're convicted of a capital crime.
Well, they're violating the commandment that prohibits murder.
Right. And the reason it's wrong to murder is because you have a right to life as someone who's not committed a capital crime.
Well, but, in any event,
So you think it's wrong for one nation to come to the aid of another nation?
We have obligations, special obligations as Christians to the brethren, that is, other believers. The idea that we have to go somewhere and fight in defense of unbelievers is not a biblical idea.
Well, you keep saying the obligation. I'm asking you, if we want to love our neighbor, and if our neighbor is being slaughtered, would we have the right to go and help our neighbor if we had the ability to do so?
Well, you're talking about war. You're talking about a war.
Right.
Yeah.
If the Nazis are slaughtering the French— and I'm not especially a huge fan of the French. But if they were and I had the ability, I would want to go and help defeat the Nazis and liberate the French.
So you thought getting involved in World War II was a good idea?
Yeah, I think it was a very good idea. I think otherwise we would have given Hitler all of Europe. And so were we obligated?
I mean,
not necessarily obligated, but we certainly had the right. You have the right to stop murderers. You have that right.
Well, then you seem to believe in the Bush doctrine that it's our job to eradicate evil from the entire world.
No, if he says we have the obligation.
Your doctrine.
If he says we have the obligation, we don't have the obligation.
Well, how do we decide who to help?
We have people
all over the world, Bob, that are being tyrannized by godless dictators.
Right. So this is how we decide. This is how we decide.
Yeah. How do we decide?
We look at first, do we have the ability? Could we do it? And is it in our interest?
Exactly.
Or also, we could altruistically help, let's say, the Hutus are being slaughtered, 800 million in Africa. And if we have the ability, and even though it doesn't threaten us, we could help save 800,000 black men, women, and children if we have the ability. We'd have the right to stop their slaughter if we were so inclined to do so, even though it's halfway around the world.
Well, I don't think it was a good idea to side with Joseph Stalin against Hitler. I think it would be a good idea to let them destroy each other.
George W. Patton was right. We could have went in and we could have defeated the communists.
Yeah, but, Bob, you see, it's God's job to raise up nations and cast nations down. It's not our job to do that.
Well, I'm not talking about raising up nations.
Well,
I'm
sure
talking about
talking
fighting
about
against a murderer.
From slaughter.
I'm talking about fighting against a murderer, whether the murderer is here in this country or if he's slaughtering Mexicans or Canadians or Jews or the French or Russians. 20 million were murdered by Stalin in the Soviet Union. And if we could stop that brutality, then I think it's a good idea.
We don't have to necessarily go to war to do that, do we?
Well, if you have to go to war, then you go to war and you stop the murderers.
Well, then
if
you're
you
just
have
going
the ability.
To war all over the world all the time.
No, you're not obligated. But if you have the ability, and especially for a government, if you view it's in your national interest, then of course you have the right to go and stop a murderer.
Well, I don't think we have the ability. I think we're spread too thin. We're not going to be able to fight all these wars all over the world.
Hey, John, if you don't,
evil people,
if you don't think America was right for fighting against the Nazis, obviously you're going to find 100 reasons to oppose any aspect of any other lesser battles that we choose. And so I think you almost disqualify yourself from being taken seriously on matters of foreign policy and war.
Well, then you disagree with George Washington. You think it's a good idea to get entangled in alliances in European wars.
I think Washington's advice was great. Don't get entangled. But when Adolf Hitler is threatening to rule half the world and he's slaughtering millions of people, then I think you've heard of the Good Samaritan? Who was laying dying, and Jesus said the example of love is what the Samaritan did. Yeah. And he said the Samaritans, they didn't know God, but the Samaritan came to the aid of the innocent victim.
Well, that's an interesting story because the Samaritan didn't seek out the person that beat the guy up and declare war on him and his country. He took him to an inn and bound up his wounds and cared for him. If you want to send medical supplies and try to help people save their lives that are being slaughtered, fine. We're talking about when do you go to war?
Right. And war is an extension of self-defense. The same way you have the right to
do it. Already we're in trouble. When you start extending it as a metaphor or poetic, then you're in trouble.
The same way you have the right to defend yourself, a nation has the right to defend itself from unjust aggression.
Right.
And the same way you have the right to defend your neighbor, a nation has the right to defend its neighbor against unjust aggression.
Well, I mean, for what it's worth, and of course it's not the same as being at odds with Scripture, but you're at odds with our founders. One of the Adams is, I forget which one, said that we were friends of liberty everywhere, but we were guardians only of our own liberty, that it was not our job to go around the world looking for monsters to destroy.
It's not our job. It's not our, just, you know, remember Jesus said, who is your neighbor?
That's right.
Hey, who is my neighbor? Well, I got to love my neighbor, but that guy, he's not a Christian. Those Jews, you know, those Jews being slaughtered by Hitler, they didn't believe in Jesus Christ. So I'd rather not exert the effort or take the risk to defend them.
Well, we have special obligations only to the brethren, and to go to war,
stopping somebody from
unbelievers. I don't.
Stopping innocent people from being murdered is not exactly some kind of a special interest, I think.
Well,
it's a fundamental concern.
What is the number, by the way? Under the Inyart doctrine, what is the number of people that once you think they're being slaughtered that we then declare war and intervene? What's that number?
If it's just and if we have the ability
right.
and if we have the desire to, we can do it. Well, you have invented John, the Bible does not give your position. It doesn't state anywhere that nations could not defend one another. It doesn't say that.
The Bible makes it very clear, Bob, that Christian nations are not to enter into alliances with unbelieving nations. That's very clear.
I'm all for not entering into treaties. I'm all for ending all foreign aid because those things are unbiblical. But when you said here that extrajudicial assassinations.
I don't think that's my word. I call them murders. I don't call them extrajudicial assassinations.
Okay, so killing someone who's not been convicted of a crime.
Yeah.
How about in the Bible all the time, all the occasions where that happened?
Well, I distinguish
between... And God applauded the men who killed the criminals.
May I answer the question?
Yeah.
I applaud. I mean, I obviously believe that something's right when God does it. I do not believe it's right when Ariel Sharon or Menachem Begin did it.
Well, how about when David did it or Abraham did it?
Well, everything in the Bible is not cited as an example of behavior we should imitate.
Oh, I know that. When David killed Uriah the Hittite, that was murder. When he slew Goliath, the Philistine...
Are you defending now Israel going out and in the last 2 years they've assassinated with no trial?
Well,
are you defending that?
I'd rather you stay on my examples first rather than run away from them. And then
ground you're defending. Are you defending the Israeli policy of assassination?
I'm not going to allow you to escape the example I gave to you. When David slew Goliath without a trial, was that an extrajudicial murder?
Was that heroic
because he was defending his country land from an enemy?
Yeah, I think you got that story backward. Israel is Goliath. See, they're the giant.
I'm asking you of the story in the Bible when David slew Goliath, apart from a judicial conviction. Was that a godly, righteous thing he did, or was it a murderous assassination?
Well, I never thought about it. I mean, he did it.
How about when Abraham went after Lot? When Lot was kidnapped.
Are these stories like what you think the Israelis are doing?
I'm trying to get to your underlying principles. I'm trying to understand if you have a solid...
The underlying principle is that you shouldn't execute people. First of all, scripturally, capital crimes...
We're going to a break. If you want to hang on, John Lofton, I'd like to ask you, was Abraham right for going after Lot's captives, and was David right for killing Goliath? We're back, Bob and Yurt Live, 1-800-8-NYURT, 1-800-836-9278. We're on with John Lofton, publisher of the Lofton Letter. And Mr. Lofton has been a journalist for 30 years, a nationally syndicated columnist, TV radio commentator, political advisor. He's been an advisor to the presidential campaign of Pat Buchanan. He writes a monthly column for Howard Phillips, who is a dear friend of this program. So we have John Lofton on here. And so many issues we would agree so wholeheartedly. But John, on this, I don't see that you are basing your opinion on biblical principles.
Well, let me try to convince you. Scripture makes it absolutely clear that when you have a capital crime and someone is executed, you have to have two witnesses.
That's not true.
Of course it is. In capital crimes, there have to be two witnesses.
It's not true.
Well, I'll email you tonight the scriptures.
Well, I know the verse.
You can't just go out and kill people because everybody thinks they're a terrorist.
Well, I know the verses you're referring to that you need two or three witnesses to execute someone
for capital crime.
For a capital crime, but Jesus in the Old Testament, in the New Testament, addresses the issue of witnesses.
Yeah.
Points out that witnesses do not need to be eyewitnesses.
I didn't say eyewitnesses. I said you have to have two witnesses.
Okay, and in the Mosaic Law, if you recall, God lays out the case where a woman is raped in the wilderness and there's no one there to hear her cry, yet the rapist is executed, God says. He's killed for his crime because the woman is innocent because she was raped. She's one witness. And then obviously God leaves it to the judges to find the physical evidence to bring the conviction and then execute the criminal, even though there's only one witness, the woman who was raped.
So you cite a principle. When the Israelis get up in a helicopter and they go down a road and they incinerate a car, which happens to contain some guy's wife and kids, another accident. There is no judge, Bob. There are no judges.
Well, when you're in war, when you're we shot a Hellfire missile from a Predator drone in Yemen a few weeks ago.
Yeah, I'm worried about that. That bothers me.
Into a van, we killed six members of Al Qaeda. I think one was American.
You don't know that.
Well,
you know
I don't know that absolutely right. And every of 260 million people in a country, everyone cannot have full access to intelligence. That's just the reality of I'm not in charge. And if I had a big enough ego, I would say I condemn everything my government does unless they fully inform me. But that's inappropriate. That
you're ego arguing against, Bob, what you're arguing against is the idea of due process of law.
No, I'm not. Yeah. I'm arguing against the right to fight a war. And when you're fighting a war, David, now would you answer my question?
There are rules in war, Bob. Did you know that? As a Christian, there are rules in war.
I know that.
What are they?
And first answer my questions you've dodged. When Abraham went after Lot's kidnappers, he took 300 armed men from his own household.
What does that have to do with Israel killing all those assassinating?
That's not. I'm asking you to answer these questions.
Yeah, but what do they have to do with the topic?
I want to see if your worldview is able to incorporate clear biblical examples or not. When Abraham went after Lot's kidnappers, and when David slew Goliath, and I could give you other examples if you like, when those things happened, was David a murderer for not waiting for a conviction? Was Abraham a murderer, or was God right in praising them and blessing them for what they did?
But what does this have to do with our topic?
I want to find out if you know right from wrong on these issues.
Well, I think it's wrong to execute people without trials, evidence, judges, or juries.
You're not answering my question.
Well, don't you think it's wrong to execute people without judges or juries or evidence?
John Lofton, I never thought you would behave like a liberal on my show and refuse to answer a direct question.
Your argument, Bob, is the argument of the lynch mob, which says we don't need a trial or a jury. We all know this guy's guilty, so kill him.
I'm asking you if David was a murderer for killing Goliath apart from a trial.
And I've asked you several times, why do you...
I will not answer...
Of course not. You're trying to change the subject.
I am staying right on the heart of the principle
you're
of the matter.
You're defending Israel.
Okay, John...
You're not defending Israel. You're trying to change the subject.
John Lofton, this is what you should do. You should say, Bob, I have not incorporated all the biblical stories of people being killed into my principles of when it's right and when it's wrong to kill someone, so I'm not prepared to answer those questions. That's what you should say.
Well, would you like me to hang up and you can interview yourself as to what I should have said?
No.
I'm
if you have a different answer than that, I'm ready to hear it. So is the audience.
Well, I've asked you several times. Are you defending Israel's policy of assassinating people?
I am not going to let you. I'm not going to let you run away from a simple and direct question.
I see. I just don't understand the relevance of your questions.
Well, was David a murderer for killing Goliath?
I never thought about it.
Okay.
I never thought about it. Now, would you answer my question?
Okay. Yeah, I'll get to your question after I make a comment on what you just said.
Yeah.
I think before you espouse an issue publicly on a matter of right and wrong with killing people or not killing people.
Murdering, not killing, not merely killing.
Whether you murder or kill on any of those issues.
They're different.
I think before you espouse an issue like that publicly, you have an obligation to respect God enough to find out what he has said on the matter and make sure your views are consistent with his views. And since you can't answer basic questions of some of the most popular stories in the Bible, since they seem to go against your view, you should reconsider your view and work out a systematic theology where the Bible does support your view and your view supports the Bible, and then you are qualified to speak publicly.
Well, my view, I'll stick by my view, which is that you shouldn't execute people before a trial and finding out that they're in fact guilty.
All right. And by your view, Abraham and David were murderers guilty of things for which God blessed them.
I told you earlier, Bob, and you agreed that not everything that these people did in the Bible is prescriptive.
Of course not.
It's not a recommendation, Bob.
Right. So when David murdered Uriah the Hittite, that was a murder.
Yeah,
for that, God condemned him. But when he killed Goliath apart from a conviction, for that, God blessed him.
And your point, and therefore, what does that have to do with Israel?
Therefore, sometimes in the Bible, we could go through where many men in the Bible killed people apart from a conviction in a trial, and what they did was right.
All right, we're making a little progress here now. So would you go so far as to say that God is pleased and approves and blesses the 50 or more assassinations of all those people by Israel?
Okay, now I think you're right. I think we can get to Israel now.
Thank you.
Since we've thoroughly laid the foundation of the difference between your position and my position. Okay, so if a nation is being attacked by people who are intentionally targeting...
By people whose land you've stolen. Go ahead.
Well, we'd have to talk about that if you want to talk about that. Do you want to talk about that issue? Or do you want to talk about whether a nation has the right to attack people who are attacking them? Which of those two issues should we
address first? See, what I would say
first?
Is that maybe among these 50 or more people that were assassinated, maybe they were people that did attack Israel. But we'll never know, Bob. There was no trial.
There was no evidence.
There was no judges. Do you approve of that?
Okay, now which? Okay,
question.
Now that's three issues, John.
Approve,
I want to ask you,
well,
you which
one
should.
One. Do you approve of their policy of just summarily executing people? Do you approve of that?
Should we address whether or not Israel has a right to be there, to exist in that land, or should we address whether or not a nation has the right to kill people who are actively involved in killing them? Which of those two?
We don't know if any of those people were.
Which of those two do you want to address?
Well, I want to address the question I raised first. Do you support and defend and think God is pleased by Israel's policy of assassinating people that they say are terrorists?
Okay, because, John Lofton, because you would say any country is guilty any time they kill anyone apart from a conviction in a trial, therefore, of course, you will be opposed to Israel for doing what they're doing. Of course. So. And you should be able to admit that. You should be able to say, a priori, I convict Israel of being guilty because they're violating my principle, which I haven't established from the Bible, but they're sure. violating my principle. And from my perspective, since you do have the right to kill people who are in the process of killing you, mm-hmm. since you have the right to do that, nations also have the right to do that.
So you support their policy then?
And governments are not obligated.
Why would you say if you support their policy? I don't get it.
Governments are not obligated in real time, John Lofton, to give full intelligence to every civilian before
that.
They take an action.
Bob,
so that I approve of Israel shooting a missile into a van to kill a terrorist leader because they have evidence that he's actively plotting to kill more Jews. I applaud them for killing terrorist leaders. I wish they would have killed Osama bin Laden.
How do you know they had that evidence? You just trust whatever they say.
Well,
right?
I don't have a big enough ego to demand that my government, even the government of America,
that doesn't involve ego. You don't have it.
No, it is an ego. God says that the civilian.
Are you a Christian Zionist?
God says that the citizen. How many? You know, when I debate liberals, they try to change the topic six times, especially when they're losing.
No, I'm just surprised,
John, that's
by
five.
Your knee-jerk support of Israel.
You're up to five. One more time, and I'm going to have to think you're a closet liberal. Okay, so a government, you know, God in the Bible lays out an authority structure, and he doesn't say that you, John, are to run the country. The governing officials run the country, and they don't have an obligation, especially in times of war, to fully inform everyone as to every act they take in defense
of
the country.
Israel hasn't told us anything, Bob, about any of the people.
Oh, nothing? Okay, we'll be back. See if you could defend that. Bob Enyart here, 1-800-8-ENYART, 1-800-836-9278. We've had calls coming in, but John Lofton has been good enough to stay with us, and so we've stayed with him and kept people on hold. John, was that just an exaggeration? Israel has not told us anything?
No, what I said was Israel has not told us anything about the more than 50 people over the last couple of years that they've assassinated by exploding their cell phones and blowing their head off or shooting a missile into the housing project where you happen to kill the wife and the family.
John Lofton, I want to stop on that point.
How trusting you are of when the Israel
government
says
John, you just
you
made
it.
A statement I'd like to respond to.
Yeah.
I occasionally, maybe once every 2 or 3 weeks, read the Jerusalem Post online.
Mm-hmm.
And there are plenty of articles in there where a Jeep is blown up by a missile from an Israeli helicopter,
mm-hmm.
and people in the Jeep are killed, typically we find out not only the terrorists, but the names of other civilians who may have been in the Jeep with them, and what the terrorist has been accused of, and what evidence there was that he was guilty. That's commonly reported in the media.
Sure. Well, the only
so why would you say Israel has not told us anything about anyone they killed?
No, what I'm saying is that what the only problem with that is that we don't know if anything that they tell us is true or not.
Of course not. Ariel Sharon probably does not call you up at home and say, John, here's the latest evidence. Should we proceed?
You're being silly. The answer
no, I'm
the,
not. What do you want him to do?
The answer to the problem I raise will be solved by having a trial and witnesses and
no,
judges
that's
like
not
they
true.
Did with Eichmann.
That's
what
not
they did
true.
With Adolf Eichmann. They that, had a that's trial. Why,
that's
they
why,
put him in front of the world. We heard evidence, and it was very convincing.
Hey, John, but that's why I said earlier, if we looked at your fundamental principle on this issue and mine, they disagree, and you believe a priori that Israel is guilty, regardless of if these are guilty terrorists who intentionally murdered innocent people.
Sure.
You think Israel is guilty anyway, so you are extraordinarily biased on whether or not they could be right or wrong. You dismiss the evidence.
I know what I think.
Out of hand.
I believe that the people who have been involved in assassinating those 50 or more people over the last 2 years that they said were terrorists, and the people who authorized those assassinations are, in God's eyes, the same as the terrorists.
Right. Even, absolutely. Even if the terrorists
absolutely.
Were guilty of murder, right?
Bob,
even if that,
you
you're saying they're guilty.
You
you're saying Israel's
you
guilty.
You
no, I'm just John, I'm just clarifying your position.
Yeah.
Even if the people killed by the rockets are guilty of intentionally killing innocent Jews, you're saying the Jews are guilty anyway.
No, I'm saying that they're guilty if they go out and summarily execute them.
Yeah,
without
I know.
A trial.
Even if the people they kill are guilty terrorists.
Bob, most of the people that have been assassinated, the 50 or so people that have been assassinated in the last 2 years, were not at the time they were assassinated attacking anybody.
John, I'm not saying that. I'm saying even if the people killed by the Jews were guilty of carrying out terrorist attacks against Jews, you still would condemn Israel.
Well, I'm saying we don't
even
know
if they're guilty.
We have a trial. Once they're guilty, I have no problem with executing.
Okay, now when George W. Bush ordered for that Hellfire missile to kill the Al-Qaeda members in the Jeep in Yemen, in the van.
Yeah, I'm bothered by that.
Bothered? John, I'm bothered if my kids don't put the salad fork in the right place. Bothered, but we're talking about whether people should be killed or not.
That's
is
right.
George W. Bush under a murderer?
We're talking about precisely under what circumstances should some people be executed, and I'm saying after a trial, after witnesses, after evidence. Exactly.
When you're at war.
There's no declaration of war. Don't give me this war stuff.
Well,
the idea that all we got to do is say war, and then we can do anything to anybody we want.
No, that's not true. Did I say that, John?
What?
Just like you said, Israel has not told us anything. These are extremist statements that you're being forced to make. I don't know
war.
Why.
You're being metaphorical. We're not literally at war.
Well, we are literally at war. Perhaps
we're not literally because there's been no declaration.
Well,
of war.
Perhaps we're not.
Not at war legally, Bob. We're not legally at war.
Well,
see, the reason you want to use
okay,
the war
John,
thing
let me respond
to
the point you just to. John, the point you just made. We're not legally at war. When God looks down at two nations fighting one another, like in Vietnam, God doesn't say, well, you know what? There was never a declaration of war. It's only a police action. It's a war, and God's going to judge both sides based on the just war principles in the Bible, whether or not there's a declaration of war. And if our Congress is too incompetent to declare a war on Al-Qaeda, it doesn't matter. We're at war. Israel is at war with Palestinian terrorists. We're at war, and so we could do wrong. We could do wrong in war.
As I pointed out earlier, Israel was founded by terrorists, and what they're finding out now is what our Lord said, that when you live by the sword, you die by the sword, Bob.
Well, that was a command. That was a command. God commanded, he who lives by the sword shall be killed by the sword.
That's right. So Israel.
That's a command. So
Israel
if somebody is a terrorist, they should be killed by the righteous.
Well,
or by someone in power or authority.
Do you deny that Israel was founded by terrorists?
No. Okay, no, good. When Israel does wrong, when America does wrong, when we have specific incidents of doing wrong, like many of the things we did to American Indians that were wrong, and we were guilty. But that doesn't mean that we need to give this land back to the Cherokee Indians. It doesn't mean that. Every nation in the world has wronged their neighbors. Everybody has slaughtered the people who came before them. The world is filled with blood guilt. And after World War II, the United Nations said that Israel, Britain was in charge of Palestine. The Palestinians, they didn't have a constitution. They didn't have a currency. They didn't have a leader. And they didn't have a country there that they were kicked out of. Britain was in control. And the UN and Britain agreed, we're going to give this land that Britain is in control of to the Jews. After all, they'd been there 3,000 years
ago. Yeah, we're going to kick out of their homes all those people that live there. Right. That's wrong. I don't think that's right.
Well, that's not what the UN said. Bulldozed. Hey, the UN did not say that. But on the day Israel was declared a nation, when five Arab nations attacked, tens of thousands of Arabs fled.
Sure.
And so when you're on the side of the aggressors and the aggressors lose the war, there's a price to be paid. There was a price to be paid when the Germans lost, the Japanese lost. If you have an aggressive war and you lose, you pay the price. And the Arabs have paid the price.
The whole mess that's in the Middle East now was caused by people proceeding on the Inyart doctrine, a bunch of people chopping up land and decreeing people to be nations, that it was none of their business. That's what caused the whole problem.
So should America be given back to the American Indians?
Well, the American Indians never had America. It's God's country. The land belongs to God. Just because some Indians squatted on some land, it didn't make it theirs.
That's a racist and completely unbiblical thing to say.
Oh, it is?
Yeah.
You mean if you squat on the land, it belongs to you?
No, I don't mean that.
Well, that's what I just said, and you denied it.
No, I don't mean that. But to say that the American Indians, because they weren't Christians, they had no right to the land that they lived in?
I'm saying the American Indians, who were pretty much nomadic and peripatetic, wandering around, they never claimed any land.
Well, they all had their territories. They all had their territories.
It wasn't theirs. It was never theirs. The land never belonged
to
anybody.
Well, we could draw a map today.
For the land, Bob.
We could draw a map today of the very well-defined territories of 100 different American Indian tribes.
Right. But just because you claim a territory doesn't mean it's your land. That's
all I'm saying. So when the Europeans claimed this land, does that mean then it was their land?
They claimed it in the name of Christ when they came here, and they recognized themselves as stewards over the land. They never claimed they owned the land. That's why we never had a property tax at the beginning, because the land belonged to God.
So the laws of property ownership are different whether you claim it in the name of Christ or not?
There's a big difference between a person saying, I own this land and I have stewardship over this land. That's right, that I'm just a temporary occupant.
So the laws of ownership are different based on whether you're a Christian or not?
I don't think that laws of ownership today are biblical, because they don't recognize the steward. I mean, nobody owns land in perpetuity. No human can literally say that this land is mine.
That's not true.
Are we actually going to disagree that all land on the whole earth belongs to God?
God said if you move your neighbor's property marker, if you move it, that's an abomination, because that land is his and you have no right to move his property marker.
That's right. So we have stewardship. You know the difference between owning land as your own in perpetuity versus you have just stewardship and occupancy of the land. There's a difference.
It's irrelevant.
Oh, well, okay.
It's irrelevant. God said, you said no man owns the land. God says it's his land. If you move his property marker, it's an abomination.
Well, according to your doctrine, you can tell God to drop dead. You're not bound by that commandment because it's my land. That's the whole idea. We have to obey God, what God says about the land, because
it really belongs
to him, and he just gives us stewardship
over it. If an atheist hates God, I have no right to take his money or his land.
Or murder him. That's right.
Right. No right.
Or steal from him. That's right. I agree.
I'd like you to take that principle and restate the last two points you made.
But the commandment to not move the markers presupposes that the land belongs to God, which is why he's dictating the rules. That's right.
Of course, everything that God created the earth, but he's given man dominion over the earth, and he's
dominion,
given us the right to own private property.
But not literally occupancy to do with as he sees fit. That's my point.
He gave us the right to own private property. He gave us that right.
And to do with it as he says, not as we say.
So if an atheist has money, John Lofton, can you take it away from him because he's not doing as God says with his money?
Not without due process of law. No, that would be stealing.
Okay, so if a judge, if a legislature and a judge agrees with you that we could take the money away from the Jews because they're not Christians, then do we have the right to take their money away?
No, that would be stealing.
Right, even if it was due process. Because
God is no respecter of persons.
It would be wrong process. All right. Hey, John, you and I agree on some fundamental biblical principles, and you admit it, you were unable to respond to some of the most popular stories in the Bible.
Well, I denied that they had any relevance to our topic.
Well, I would hope that you could incorporate those stories into your worldview so that the Bible will not seem to contradict John Lofton's positions.
Well, if it ever does, John Lofton is wrong.
Well, on Abraham and David, you need to work on that.
Well, everything David did wasn't good.
That's right. And killing Goliath, was that good or bad?
Does it say that God blessed him?
Amen. Praise the Lord, brother.
Amen.
Thank you, John Lofton.
Israel is Goliath. Remember that. Our money.
Appreciate you staying on with us.
God bless you and your family and your work.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And may God bless you. Hey, we're almost out of time. John Lofton is at jloff@aol.com. We could see, you know, on this show, it's been over a decade that we've been taking biblical principles, applying them to current events, and finding out whether it's right or wrong for governments to do certain things. And if we don't have a solid foundation from which to make those judgments, our judgments can often be easily misinformed. This is Bob Enyart reminding you to do right and risk the consequences.
So thanks for listening to that. I hope it was instructive. We have on our website at kgov.com many programs and articles presenting a biblical worldview that thousands of Christians have found helpful over the last many years, decades now. So we invite you to come to KGov, kgov.com. If you like what you're seeing, check out the store. May God bless you.